Your film is now ready to be shown.
Good morning. I'm Justin Hendricks, editor of Tech Policy Press, a nonprofit media venture intended to provoke new ideas, debate, and discussion at the intersection of technology and democracy. This week, I'm pleased to once again bring you a segment of Evidence Base, highlighting new research on how technology interacts with people, politics, and power. This segment is produced by audio reporter Rebecca Rand.
Nice to be back in the virtual studio with you, Rebecca.
Thank you for having me here.
So I wanted to bring you in because you've recently spoken with a researcher who's digging in a little deeper on this concern about the harms of recommendation systems on social media.
Yeah, that's right. She's adding to the body of research that's looking at how what pops up on, say, your Instagram feed can have negative impacts on your life and your mental state.
We're hearing about this a lot, of course, specifically as people are talking about the possible harms these platforms have on kids.
Yeah, that's right. Back in June, you probably heard the U.S. Surgeon General Vivek Murthy propose putting black box warning labels on social media products. Of course, he can't actually do that without Congress, but he's one of a number of political leaders who's trying to mitigate this rise in mental health issues among young people.
And this is an area of some controversy in the tech policy space right now. Just how much certainty do we have that there's a connection between social media and things like mental health? We see this question raised in a lot of contexts.
Yeah, and there's still a lot we don't know.
So what did you learn from your conversation with this researcher?
So her name is Christiana Ferrullo, and she's a PhD candidate in the Department of Information Science at Cornell. And she's applying some of her behavioral economics background to try to understand why recommendation algorithms would behave in a way that makes users feel, well, bad. And interestingly, her exploration is not just academic. It's personal, too. She got into this after noticing how platforms like Instagram and Facebook exacerbated her own condition when she was struggling with an eating disorder. She would open up Instagram and she noticed something.
I was constantly matched with content about exercise and food in a way that didn't leave space to other content. So every time I was trying to use social media for entertainment, I was trapped. Like I was kind of constrained in having to watch these kind of videos on how to cook healthy recipes or something.
So what Christiana is describing is what they kind of call the filter bubble, which limited her ability to see a wide range of content and intensified her focus on triggering posts. And this actually really confused her because she essentially feels like, don't these platforms want users to have a good experience? Isn't that the best way to keep users like me coming back?
This is a difficult set of questions, but the reality is there's a lot of competing priorities, even within the platforms, about how to engineer their products to achieve optimal results, including engagement and profit.
You're right, but Christiana has a less nefarious explanation for what's happening here because she doesn't think social media companies are out to get us exactly, or at least that's not the whole story for her.
If you just look at what is the actual goal of digital platforms, the goal is to give users a good experience because if they are happy, they will come back tomorrow and I will monetize from them. There is a misalignment, but I don't think it's deliberate. I think it's specifically caused by the lack of sophistication in the algorithms.
So she thinks this lack of sophistication leads to what she calls a cursed equilibrium.
Okay, what's that?
It's a game theory concept that basically describes when two entities are locked in a bit of a feedback loop that keeps escalating certain behavior. Christiana looked at Instagram's recommendation algorithm and said, okay, they're prioritizing content based on user engagement, but the algorithm has no idea which engagement is healthy enjoyment and which engagement is obsessive.
Engagement is not, I don't think it's analyzed in a way that can really help to understand whether a person is vulnerable or not. The platforms cannot recognize that the person engages with that specific content because of the obsession.
So users who are obsessive are providing this really strong signal to the algorithm, stronger than healthy engagement. Please feed me more of this. The algorithm knows nothing to do with that except give you more. And when it gives you more, you get more obsessive, and thus you and the algorithm are locked in a dance where it's making you more and more engaged, and internally you're saying no, but all the algorithm is hearing is yes.
Sounds like this algorithm is too simple. Like it isn't able to differentiate between what people actually want and what they can't peel their eyes from.
Correct. And one thing she talks about is how engagement, perhaps, is a flawed signal.
The problem is that measuring happiness is not possible. So as you know, everyone in science does, we need to use proxies. The proxy that they're using is engagement. And this is a bad proxy.
Got it. So what have platforms done to try to mitigate this, like making sure there isn't harmful content on there to begin with?
Well, that has to do with the other side of the equation, something she calls algorithmic traumatization.
And how does she define that?
She says it's this idea that a lot of this obsessive content you're going to see isn't inherently harmful. You know, it's pretty tame. It's not going to get taken down by moderators. She described it this way.
What I'm talking about is not about things that should be moderated. I'm talking about content that is individually okay. Like people should and could share certain things. The problem is the joint recommendation of all these things. These things are jointly harmful.
It's like one video showing a healthy smoothie, another video showing how to strengthen your abs. Instagram has no reason to remove this stuff. It's seemingly harmless on its own. But when it's in this relentless algorithmic context, that's when she says it becomes a problem. You get diet tip after diet tip after diet tip, and the collective effect of those is what harms you. That's why content moderation hasn't been enough.
So what does Christiana think of legislative efforts underway to shield kids in particular from these interactions with social media platforms?
Well, that's one interesting thing about her work. She actually thinks our focus on kids is way too narrow.
So regulation is obsessed with the fact that we should protect minors because you're more vulnerable because of your age. I don't think this is necessarily true. I'm 27 and I'm vulnerable. The thing that no one has really considered is that this is not because these are generations that are different from older generations. The difference is that minors, teenagers in particular, they use social media platforms on a daily basis and more than older generations. So the real difference is how they interact with each other, how they get information about the outside world, and this is affecting their mental health. That means that when they will become adults, probably they will have the very same problems.
Interesting. So she's saying that the dose makes the poison and that the average young person is getting a way higher dose.
Exactly.
Did she give any examples of vulnerable groups aside from those struggling with eating disorders?
Yeah, so addiction was another one, particularly with online gambling. And another scenario she described that wasn't even about obsession was just sick people. Let's say someone has cancer and they're going on Instagram and they're going there because they want a bit of an escape. But because they've been Googling about cancer treatment, they keep getting ads about cancer studies and cancer treatments instead of what they actually wanted, cat videos or whatever.
So on to solutions, what's she saying about how we can address this problem?
Well, Christiana hopes that platforms will get on board with the idea that happy users are good for business. And they need to do a better job of measuring users' overall well-being to make sure they're not accelerating someone's downward spiral. She says they need to use proxies other than engagement. And I know a lot of listeners are going to be really skeptical that platforms will actually do anything with this information. So I asked her about it.
One thing you brought up before is that you thought that fixing these problems would actually be appealing to social media companies because there are some ways where their profits are aligned with user happiness and enjoyment. I think a lot of people are really skeptical of that. and I want to ask you a bit about how you come to that belief.
That's a great question. And you're right, it's part of you because many people don't buy that. What I'm trying to say is that I don't think that Facebook wakes up in the morning and says, okay, I want to harm people. I don't think this is what is happening. But I do agree that there is a lack of responsibility when these platforms neglect these features and these aspects of human data.
Well, I guess that's the job of policy people listening, to figure out and get them to stop neglecting this responsibility. Rebecca, thanks for breaking this down.
Thanks for having me on.
That's it for this episode. I hope you'll send your feedback. You can write to me at justin@techpolicy.press. Thanks to my co-founder, Brian Jones. Thanks to Rebecca Rand. And thank you for listening.
Tech Policy Press.